C1B 1 and 2.
Number 9A.
So we have taken the tone of life. I just want to run quickly through it so that we get the reason. Yes. What is that subject? It was a subject to see how the idea of immortality dissolves the belief in mortality. We would like to see that experienced in our lives. How are we going to demonstrate that? We would have to go out first from life as mind and see first that man is only the idea of life, that the mortal man is actually not the idea of life, and therefore not man. In spirit, we would see that the idea of life as man is purely spiritual. Therefore, a material man is not the real man, and therefore his death is not the death of man. As the point of soul, I would see, therefore, I shouldn't be concerned so much with the material aspect of man, but rise above through spiritual sense and spiritual understanding to contemplate only man as the idea of life, as being immortal. And only in this way would I come to a higher sense, to a higher experience of life. This would free me from a lower mortal experience. But in order to prove that higher sense of life would mean that I would have to prove that mortal sense of life has nothing in me, that I can free myself of the false sense of mortal life. And so I have to demonstrate with a principle really a reformation taking place, demonstrate the nothingness of error, and do not need to expect that really God will pardon us and just lift us into heaven at the point of death. That would mean that at the point of life as life, I begin to see that I must do something about it, that I must be spiritually active, that I must know God better, that I can actually only gain deathless life through spiritual progression and probation. I have to go through the problems of life and demonstrate in everyday life that actually mortal life has nothing in me and cannot find anything in me. I have to do that. I can't just sit back and say life is eternal and that's that. I have to demonstrate it and prove it through progression and probation. And in the measure as I do that, I begin at the point of life as truth really to overcome the erroneous sense of material life. And I see I have to demonstrate daily the destruction of a false concept of life. And if I do that more and more, somehow my consciousness begins to raise to the level of divine science at the point of love, where I really begin to see that death has nothing in me. There where I begin to see that when the last mortal fault is destroyed, that then I really have gained heaven, and that mortality is ended. But when is that? When is that? Then, when I make that transition in consciousness from Christian Science to absolute Christian Science, to divine science, where I'm willing only to look out from the synonymous terms and only see the realm of the synonymous terms as idea. There is no death in that. And then I feel I can no more be touched by death. Death may come, but findeth nothing in me, because my consciousness knows only the ideas of God. And I've gained a higher sense of being, of life. No matter if I walk on this earth or not, I've gained it. This naturally would show that all depends on consciousness. And that all is a matter of overcoming a mortal consciousness. And that's the subject of truth that we are considering next. Namely, in truth we see that actually the idea of an immortal consciousness, a consciousness that is now formed, molded by life, that the idea of an immortal consciousness which constitutes really man dissolves the belief of a mortal consciousness which constitutes mortal man. So here I find really that in order to demonstrate immortal man instead of mortal man, I have to demonstrate the idea of immortal consciousness, which takes care of mortal consciousness, and if I overcome mortal consciousness, I have overcome mortal man. The stone of truth is all on that level of spiritual consciousness, and therefore shows that the cultivation, or I don't like the term cultivation really, but that the realization of a divine consciousness frees us from a mortal consciousness. But there again we would ask, how can we do that? What are the steps? And again we can go through the seven subtones and start out with mind and first compare mortal consciousness with immortal consciousness and see that we cannot just talk about consciousness, that consciousness is all that matters, that we have to specify consciousness and say all that matters is actually an immortal consciousness, because we want to get rid of mortal consciousness. And so we have to specify consciousness, because the human consciousness is constantly vacillating between an immortal consciousness and a mortal consciousness. It takes in idea, it takes in delusions. It does not really make a clear-cut separation between that what constitutes an immortal consciousness and that what constitutes a mortal consciousness. So mind, I have epitomized like this: material man and the material universe have their origin where? In the self-destructive, illusive consciousness. So I start consciousness from the point of view of mind and the counterfeit of mind. I see that man and the universe is nothing else but what is the outcome, the effect of an illusive consciousness. Whereas the real man has its origin in the divine mind, and therefore that mind is the divine consciousness. Mrs. Eddy gives to this subtone quite a lot of space. It is about 2 pages, and they are perhaps some of the most difficult pages to understand in the textbook. They are those pages that always somehow give to the students much to think about, and so I don't think that in a short few minutes I can clarify everything, but let's see the train of thought that runs through it. It is really that whole question that everyone has to answer for himself, and has to answer for himself during his lifetime perhaps 10, 20 times, and always answers it differently, and always tries to answer it a bit from a higher standpoint, namely about the origin of error. The side remark is primitive error. It is a great question, where does error come from? If there is only a divine consciousness and God has created everything good, where does evil come from? That great question. And in the life of a Christian Scientist, this question is answered in many, many ways. In many different ways. In many different ways, in the far that one also always begins to see somehow a higher answer. But it seems to be quite a tricky question, and it's not very easy to see through it. Why? Because It is our erroneous consciousness that asks the question. An erroneous consciousness can never give us the truth. An erroneous consciousness can never understand the true consciousness. This is the great point, I guess, that we must first see if we tackle the whole question a bit more deeply than perhaps on the surface, that we can see this is actually a wrong question. Why is it a wrong question? Because error asks a question about the truth, and error can never find the truth, or it would not be error. This is always the great point. You have to remember that you have to ask always first, is it really a right question? Not every question can be answered. Not because one doesn't know the truth about that question, but mostly because the question is put wrongly. It's already a lie and the father of it. I cannot ask where does error come from when there is no error. I cannot ask that question. It's, in the first place, a wrong question. A question that needs no answer and therefore cannot be answered. I guess this is something which we have to see. Many students are engaged in the study of Christian Science. They are always full and full of questions. They are full of questions. And I think the very first thing they always should do is first to ask, is this really a right question? Is this a legitimate question? Is this a sensible question? Therefore, you will feel that most of the questions you ask for yourself or others are wrong questions. They are all those questions which ask, why is the earth flat? Can you tell me? Why is the moon made of cheese? Why is the moon made of cheese? Tell me. Why? Can you tell me? No. You never can tell me. You can know as much of truth as you want. You cannot answer that question, because it's not a question about truth. So here, I think, in these two pages, she tries to tackle that question. She may not have answered it just the way I have spelled it out, but it comes very near to that. And can you see how easy life becomes, and how easy the study of Christian Science becomes when we only ask ourselves true questions? Because true questions find an answer. But you can see what kind of a hell we go through all our life if we ask thousands and thousands wrong questions and find no answer, and how depressed we may get not finding answers to our questions, because we do not realize that we ask something that cannot be asked. Why is 2 times 2 17? Tell me, why? Why is it? Nobody can answer that. What is not a fact, and therefore there is no question about it. And our lives get much, much easier if we do not go out from questions. If we go out from our new system of reference. That system of reference has no questions. That just says, I'm mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And if you want to know something more about that, then just reason along mind and mind's ideas and never deviate from that. Just reason along spirit and spiritual ideas. Never deviate from that. Then you cannot even ask wrong questions. You not even may ask right questions. You flow. Your consciousness just flows into the flow of spiritual reality without questioning. Just try to get that standpoint. You know, I've naturally a lot of students all over the world. When you have a lot of students, you have funny kind of students. And sometimes I have students I remember over 30 years. And every time they come to me, they ask me questions. I've never seen that they came and said, Look here, old boy, what I have seen. I have seen this, how beautiful that is. And the reason from the synonymous, they always have questions. The funniest kind of questions. Why? This is not science. Science is to reason from principle. Science, therefore, is to reason from the synonymous term. And flow with the synonymous term. And fill your consciousness with what you know. What we do not know, we cannot question anyway. So we better find out the realm of reality by that what we know. And flow from the principle. And as we can see now, how we can structure our elements, how we can structure those seven synonymous terms by blending the seven synonymous terms, by blending the ideas of the seven synonymous terms, by blending the category of the seven synonymous terms with the fourfold operation of Word, Christ, Christianity, and science, can flow with them through the levels of science, divine science, absolute science, Christian science. We are kept very busy. Very busy. So busy that we have no time to ask funny questions. To ask question is always somehow going out from ignorance and trying to be enlightened. Christian science goes out always from mind. If you reason in Christian science, we begin with mind that can be understood through the ideas of mind. That's our way of consciousness. And it makes life easier, makes my life more full, because we are always roaming in the fullness of our understanding and never in the lack of our understanding, and that makes life much more full and bigger. So here Mrs. Eddy brings up that question of primitive error, of the origin of error. And she naturally says that the error is actually all these beliefs which are not true. So it is thinking along untrue lines, and that never leads anywhere. So she asks again, what is then this the origin of mortal mind? Where does mortal mind come from, is our question. And her answer is, that question is from the Father, the devil. He didn't say that question comes from God. That's really a good question. That's really a divine question. It says, when you ask for the origin of evil or of mortal mind, you ask the question of the devil, of your father, the devil. It is not the divine question. So we should let it go. And that devil is a murderer from the beginning. He kills our whole consciousness because we ask wrong questions and we are worried not to find the true answer. Somehow I don't like to go through life just making my life more difficult. I don't know if you do that, if you like that, just making life more difficult than it is, just to murder everything what one has in consciousness by asking wrong questions, by thinking along wrong lines. I don't see much purpose in that one. So I like to think along the synonymous terms. And so she says, they are murderer from the beginning. He does not abide in the truth. You see, now she says, this question does not abide in the truth. It's not the true question. It speaks a lie. She says what I would say, it is a wrong question. It speaks a lie. When he lies, he speaks of his own. He speaks of his own. He never speaks about God, about the truth. A wrong question is never a question about truth. He speaks of his own. And he is a lion and the father of it. She just can't get over that it is a lion, the father of it, and that speaks of its own. It's anyway not truth, and it's anyway not about truth. So why worry about it? The same she says about the origin of evil, about, and this is then a more difficult passage, about electricity, which she defines as the least material form of elusive consciousness, and brings it back to a material mindlessness, and just begins to show too that it is a counterfeit force of that divine force of mind, that that mind is actually the only force, the only power, therefore the only thing that really matters in our lives. It's the counterfeit forces of the divine mind, and says, and you know, this elusive consciousness, which is wrong, has the power to destroy itself. Because it hasn't any constructive basis, it destroys itself. So let it destroy itself. Let it go down the drain. Let your questions go down the drain. That's my advice. That's my advice. There is plenty, plenty, plenty to think about truth and from God, instead of thinking from a lie, from ignorance. There's plenty to occupy our thought. So why make life more difficult? See, we have seen at the beginning of this chapter that it is actually the divine idea that makes us think the way we are thinking, and that it has a history of evolution. Therefore, let the divine idea, namely mind, come into our thinking and use our thinking for an evolution of understanding. And not try to do the very opposite, that we think we can think truth, and that we can think what is error and what is truth. We can't. We come right back to the beginning of this terrific chapter, which wants to show it's the idea of truth that will take care and destroy elusive consciousness. It's beautiful. I'm always sorry for the many students that follow us for quite a while or many years. They just don't seem to be able to let go of error, of wrong questions. That they feel that life is not full if they can't ask 1,000 questions every day. Whereas life is full then when we fill it with truth. And therefore, don't ask questions. Why should we ask questions? Why should we ask nothingness? Because question is ignorance. There is nothing we can understand. There is darkness. So why muddle around in the darkness? Why not let your light shine? And if we let our light shine and go out from the synonymous term, darkness disappears. The question do not arise. The false question do not arise. That's the origin of error. They do not arise. They are nothing. So this is the first point of truth as mind. It's a very interesting passage there, about 2 pages. I don't think I see through those 2 pages clear enough yet. And therefore, I don't want that you take my words about this passage as authority too much. There is more in it that needs to be seen. Because we know that fundamentally the question, where does evil come from, can only be answered, as Mrs. Eddy says, by demonstration, not by reasoning. And she means with that only when we demonstrate the reasoning from truth, that we reason rightly, and reasoning rightly has no questions. Because if we go out from truth, we have only one value, the value of truth, and no value of error. And we reason in the one-valued logic of truth. And then the question of error does not come up. And until we have that point, we haven't quite solved the question, what is the origin of error?